Welcome to episode 26 of the Fredcast for the week of July the 24th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. I'm glad to have you with me. As you can imagine, tonight's show is going to be a lot of Tour de France wrap-up and a lot of fallout after the Tour de France. For instance, ton of riders jumping from team to team as they get ready and already start strategizing for next year's tour. Following that, is that a famous guy with a yellow bracelet riding Ragbri? More bears, a stolen bike database, and nuns chasing down thieves on bicycles. Following that, listener Dan with a review of his new Polar heart rate monitor / computer. A little bit of a commentary on why doping ruins sports. Some new and notable on the net, some upcoming rides, some shout-outs, and as always, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back again. We have a lot of news to cover tonight, so let's get right to it. Now, when we last spoke here on the Fredcast, Floyd Landis had gotten off his roller coaster and found himself just 30 seconds back behind Oscar Pereiro. And he had done that after really looking like he had exploded in the Tour de France and like his race was over, when on the final Alpine stage of this year's tour, he bonked. And he found himself with a humongous deficit. Next thing we know, he comes back the next day, erases that deficit, finds himself just 30 seconds back. And the question was, could Floyd still go on to win the Tour de France? Now, he was pinning his hopes on the penultimate stage of this year's race, the final, third and final individual time trial. When the day began, I had my questions. I just have to be honest with you. The reason for that is in the two previous individual time trials, Floyd had had problems. You may remember in the first stage of this year's tour, the prologue, Floyd showed up the start house after his start time had already begun. The clock was ticking. 8 or 9 seconds had gone by, and finally, Floyd was out on the course, but his rhythm was all messed up. And the difference between when he should have started and when he actually started was really the margin of victory that day. Floyd lost that stage based on the fact that he had had a wheel problem and he had to get it changed before he was actually able to start the race. Now, in the second individual time trial, Floyd started with some new handlebars, and the UCI decided just before the race that they didn't like his position. He made an adjustment, and that really didn't work, and he ended up with a broken bike, and he had to change bikes in the middle of the time trial. And that messed up his rhythm, and that was the margin of victory that day. So here we were, getting ready for another individual time trial, and wondering whether or not Floyd could actually achieve his goal of erasing the 30-second deficit. You know what? He did it. Here was Oscar Pereiro, Spain's Man of the Week, who actually did ride the time trial of his life in stage 19 in the hopes of retaining his lead and heading into Paris in yellow. But unfortunately for him, Floyd rode even better that day. Now, the stage victory went to T-Mobile's Sergei Gonchar, and you remember he's won a couple of stages in this year's tour, but he literally tore up the pavement, set a blistering pace that simply could not be bested. Second place in the stage went to Gonchar's T-Mobile teammate, Andreas Klöden, with Floyd Landis taking third place. At this point, Floyd was now poised to become the third American in history to win the Tour de France, making it 8 years in a row for a rider from the United States to stand atop the podium in Paris, wearing that yellow jersey and waving around that lion that we talked about last week. So the question was it possible that there might be a surprise in Paris in the final stage? Now, normally, sportsmanship and the etiquette of cycling says that that last stage really is the one of celebration for the man who's wearing the yellow jersey leading into Paris. And the question was whether or not anybody was really going to challenge Floyd. And nobody did, of course. The only time that it's really been contested, at least in recent memory, was when Greg LeMond ended up beating Laurent Fignon in the final stage back in 1989. But at that day, it was an individual time trial. So there was no time for champagne. There was no time for patting each other on the back. That was a day for racing. So finally, Sunday came, and in the final stage of the 2006 Tour de France, the result was exactly as expected. It was an entirely ceremonial day. There was Floyd in his yellow jersey, getting pats on the back from the peloton and sipping champagne from a crystal flute. It was really amazing. Of course, there was a sprint finish to the end of the stage, and Tor Hushovd just edged Robbie McEwen and Stuart O'Grady. But really, the man of the day was Floyd Landis. Floyd became the third American to win the Tour and the first to do so with a hip that's in need of surgery. Now, at the end of 3 weeks of racing, the top 10 riders are, in order, Floyd Landis, Oscar Pereiro, Andreas Klöden, Carlos Sastre, Cadel Evans, Denis Menchov, Cyril Dessel, Christophe Moreau, Haimar Zubeldia, and Michael Rogers. The green jersey this year went to Robbie McEwen. King of the Mountains, the polka dot jersey, went to Michael Rasmussen. And the best young rider in the white jersey, Damiano Cuniego. Now, at least for me, this was a really exciting tour, and I hope that you felt the same way, because this was the first time in a long time that from the day the tour began until the tour ended, we weren't just looking at one guy as the possible winner from day one. The yellow jersey changed hands so many times, it was really impossible to tell just until those last few days when Floyd made up that deficit. It was really impossible to tell who was going to win. And if you were reading newspaper articles or if you were watching OLN every single day, well, it could be this one. It could be that one. Oh, it could be Pereiro. It could be Landis. Oh, it could be Hincapie. It could be. And you never really knew who was going to win. So it really made for a very, very exciting race. As a matter of fact, I was reading the other day that as the final week started, OLN's ratings here in the United States really were not that great. But as the tour became more and more exciting, and as it became more and more suspenseful, OLN's ratings started going up as well. So really, congratulations to Floyd. It was a very, very well-fought victory, and I think he deserves it. He's had an amazing year so far. My only concern is that with the doping scandal that left out riders like Vinokourov and Ulrich and Basso, my hope is that Floyd's victory won't be tainted with an asterisk, as if to say, yeah, he won, but what would he have done had these guys been in the race? So let's hope that that doesn't happen. For now, it's time for celebration for Floyd Landis, for Team Phonak. Congratulations, Floyd. It was a great Tour de France. Can't wait to see what else you have in store for us, not only this year before your hip surgery, but also next year to see if you can come back and defend your Tour de France and your yellow jersey. So who was one of the first people to call Floyd Landis and offer him congratulations? Well, it was none other than first cyclist himself, President George W. Bush. President Bush called Floyd on Sunday, saying that he exhibited, quote, amazing strength. And in a quote, he said, everybody's proud of you. You showed amazing strength and character. So kind of cool that Floyd, here's a guy who grows up in a Mennonite, Pennsylvania town, goes on to win perhaps one of the most difficult athletic events in the entire world and gets a call from the President of the United States offering him congratulations. So that's pretty cool. Also, the new Pro Tour rankings are out. The rider rankings, the individual rankings, show Alejandro Valverde still in first place with 195 points. But in second place, there's Floyd Landis with 175 points. In third place, Frank Schleck from Luxembourg. Fourth, Tom Bonin. And in fifth place, Ivan Basso. In the team standings, Team CSC is in first place with 246 points, followed by T-Mobile. Costa Epargnier yields Baleares, followed in fourth place by Phonak, and fifth, the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team. As far as individual countries, Italy is leading with 523 points, then Spain with 515, Germany with 364, the United States with 352, and in fifth place, Australia with 239 points to go. Now, there are several more Pro Tour events between now and the end of the year, and the next multi-day event coming up is the Tour of Deutschland, and that begins August 1st and goes through the 9th. This is a race that was relaunched in 1999, and it's the only German stage race on the Pro Tour calendar this year. The Tour of Deutschland this year will visit the north part of the country, and every day spectators are going to be able to visit a cycling exhibition, and they're expecting about 200,000 visitors. So we'll look for that one coming up real soon, and there are a couple of single-day events between now and then. But another thing that's coming up, we all know from the Fredcast, of course, and from reading the news, that Floyd Landis is looking forward to hip surgery coming up in the next couple of months. But between now and then, it looks like there is a possibility that Floyd might race in the Tour of Britain. And that takes place August 29th through September 3rd. 16 teams are going to be involved in 6 days of grueling riding through some beautiful countryside in Britain. There are six stages in all. First stage starts all the way up in Scotland, with the final stage ending in London, starting from Greenwich and going down to the Mall in London. So that should be a really great event. They're looking forward to the possibility of Floyd Landis participating in that event this year. Okay, so let's talk briefly about the asterisk that I mentioned earlier, the possibility that Floyd's victory might end up having an asterisk next to it saying he won, but he might have not won had some of these other riders been in the Tour. One of those riders, of course, and perhaps the man at the top of everyone's list of possible winners this year before the Tour began, was Jan Ullrich. Andreas Klöden, who did participate in the Tour de France this year for T-Mobile. And by the way, T-Mobile had a very, very good race this year. If you consider Sergei Gonchar's performance as well as some of the other riders' performances. Remember, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about a Tour de France that was being led by T-Mobile with multiple members of the team in the top 10 of the general classification. T-Mobile had a very, very good Tour de France. Andreas Klöden came out in the last couple of days and was quoted as saying, "With Jan here, we would have won the Tour this year. Jan was innocent. I know him. He's a good friend of mine. We fought till the end for Jan so he can be proud of us." So here's Klöden saying exactly what I was worried about. Floyd Landis won the Tour this year, but dot, dot, dot. Meanwhile, T-Mobile has gone on and fired Jan Ullrich. Now, I've gotten a lot of emails from a lot of listeners about this. People who have said, and I guess maybe from a lot of American listeners who have said, innocent until proven guilty. How is it that these very well-known, well-thought-of riders, just because there was a suspicion or just because they were under investigation based on this Operacion Puerto scandal in Spain, why is it that they weren't allowed to continue to do their job, which is bicycle racing, in perhaps the most important race of the season, the Tour de France? Why were they told that they couldn't participate when they haven't been found guilty of a single thing? Well, it's simple. The Pro Tour rules say, and the teams agree, that if a rider is under suspicion, under investigation, in a doping-related case, that they are not allowed to participate in cycling events until the investigation is over and their name is cleared. You know, it's sort of like you hear maybe a police officer is involved in a shooting. Whether it looks good or not, whether it looks like it's a good shoot, until the investigation is completed, they're not allowed to go out and walk a beat. They're not allowed to go out and drive a patrol car. They get desk duty until the investigation is complete. Same rules here with the UCI. If you're under investigation, you're not allowed to participate. Meanwhile, T-Mobile went ahead and fired Ullrich over the entire probe. And what's interesting and what has Ullrich a little bit upset, and he said that this was, quote, unacceptable, was the fact that they didn't tell Jan personally. Instead, they faxed the letter to Jan's lawyers. Now, according to T-Mobile spokesman Christian Frommert, he said, quote, we made this decision because we believe, looking at the information provided by investigators, that Jan Ullrich is implicated in the Spanish doping affair. So, sounds like they may have some information that maybe the media hasn't gotten yet. Nevertheless, Jan's out there looking for a new team, still defending himself as vigorously as possible and saying that he is innocent and that he had nothing to do with this doping allegation. Now, meanwhile, a German newspaper has published what looks like it could be the doping schedule that Jan had planned for this year's Tour de France. Now, again, this is all alleged. This all could be bogus. It could be something totally false. But they've actually found what they say is purported to be the list of different kinds of treatments that Jan was supposedly going to be taking day by day in the Tour de France. So there's a lot still left to be said about this. There is a lot of investigation left to go. And of course, all of the riders will have their day in court, and we're going to see what's going to happen. So very, very interesting, very sad for the sport of cycling, as we've talked about, and which I'll talk about again in a few minutes. We'll get back to that. But first, let's talk about some changes that are going on with some of the teams and some of the riders on those teams as the year progresses and as we get into the 2007 cycling season. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about Floyd Landis's team, the Phonak Hearing Systems team. The hearing aid company has decided that they will not be sponsoring the team in 2007, and apparently this is because of all of the doping scandals that are going on in cycling. And remember, Tyler Hamilton, who's still under a two-year suspension from professional cycling for being found guilty of doping, was a member of the Phonak team. So based on all of this doping stuff that's going on, Phonak's decided that they will not be returning as a sponsor of the team next year. Instead, iShares, which the parent company of that is Barclays Global Investors, will be moving up and will become the new title sponsor of the Phonak team. So Phonak will now be known next year as the iShares team, and that contract goes through 2009. So we're saying goodbye to Phonak and hello to iShares. Meanwhile, there is a rumor out there that somebody else is saying goodbye to Phonak and that that might be Floyd Landis. There is a rumor out there that Floyd Landis is talking to the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team about coming back to that team in the 2007 season. Nothing has been confirmed. This is just a rumor out there, so there is always the possibility that now Landis is going to say goodbye to Phonak and possibly say hello to Discovery. Meanwhile, VeloNews is reporting that Levi Leipheimer will be leaving Gerold Steiner and now heading to Discovery next season. So now Levi says goodbye to Gerold Steiner and hello to Discovery. Levi will be riding the upcoming Tour of Germany, in which he's the returning champion, still in the Gerold Steiner jersey, and he'll be wearing that through the end of the year. But according to VeloNews, at least, it looks like he's going to be going to Discovery in 2007. And finally, somebody who's saying goodbye to T-Mobile and also might be saying hello to Discovery, there is a rumor out there that Jan Ullrich is also in discussions with the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team, whereby if his investigation goes his way in this whole drug scandal, that he might go to the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team in 2007. So really interesting. You could be looking at Levi Leipheimer, Floyd Landis, and Jan Ullrich being on the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team in 2007. Now that would definitely be the team to beat in next year's Pro Tour and in next year's Tour de France. I can't wait to see how this shakes out. Okay, that was a lot of Tour de France and a lot of Pro Tour news. Let's get away from that a little bit and start talking about some other news, because believe it or not, there is other news in the world of cycling other than the Tour de France this week. First of all, we've talked about before that this week the RAGBRAI is going on. That's the Register's annual great bicycle ride across Iowa. This is one of the great multi-day events in the United States. Well, on Thursday, July the 27th, they've designated it Livestrong Iowa at RAGBRAI, and one of the participants that day will be none other than Lance Armstrong. And he's encouraging everyone to wear yellow on that day as they participate in RAGBRAI. So that's kind of cool. Lance is going to be out there riding with the common folk, helping, again, to raise awareness for cancer, cancer survivors, and for the Lance Armstrong Livestrong Foundation. So those of you that are out there on RAGBRAI, if you're listening to this on your iPods, look for a really fit-looking guy on a Trek with a yellow bracelet. You just might be riding with a cycling legend. Now, here was a bit of news that I found really interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, I've told you before that sometimes riding here in Southern California, specifically in Los Angeles, can be a pretty hair-raising experience. A lot of motorists here in Southern California just are not very cycling aware. And that really was apparent last year when two cyclists were killed within a week of each other on the Pacific Coast Highway in the Malibu area. One of the people that was killed actually was the son of my father's doctor, and it really hit home. And I was on a ride, an organized ride, the following weekend, and everyone was wearing black ribbons on their jerseys in honor of these two cyclists that were killed. Well, the LA Bike Coalition, in coordination with other advocates in the Southern California area, is trying to work on a new safety program to address safety concerns for cyclists there on Pacific Coast Highway. They've put up 18 new Share the Road signs between Decker Canyon Road and Chautauqua Road, and they're also putting forth an effort to increase public awareness and safety, including new public service announcements on safe cycling and on road sharing, specifically targeting both motorists and cyclists. So this was a good program that I heard about. A lot of these things are going on around the country. I try to report on them here, but it's great to know that here in Southern California, we're really making an effort to try to get both cyclists and motorists a little bit more educated. I was traveling last week and rented a bike where I was, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes. And the difference between the motorist courtesy there and the motorist courtesy here was night and day. So I'm glad to see that there are groups that are trying to increase the awareness of cyclists here in Southern California among the motorists. So following up in our series of cyclists and animal encounters, here's one that happened in Boulder, Colorado just last weekend. A Denver cyclist was riding in the Boulder Peak Triathlon. This was Sabrina Way, who's 31 years old, and I'm guessing she was descending because she was going about 40 miles per hour when she ran into a bear. Now, the impact launched her off and over her handlebars, leaving her with road rash, as you can imagine, and she was probably quite a bit shaken, and the bear ran off, and apparently the bear was not hurt. Now, imagine that you've just run into a bear, that you've just slid down the road bad enough to get probably pretty bad road rash considering you went from 40 to zero in no time flat. You're probably pretty shaken, and you're probably not feeling too good at this point. But I've got to give Sabrina credit, because even though she was shaken, and even though her bike was probably damaged and she was in a lot of pain, she got back on her bike and rode the remaining 15 miles of the bike course, and then ran more than 6 miles to complete the triathlon. So congratulations to Sabrina for an amazing thing that she did after the amazing thing that she hit. Now, congratulations are also in order for Chicago cyclist Howard Kaplan. According to an article that I read, Kaplan was really tired of feeling helpless every time he read postings on email lists and bike forums about stolen bikes. And so in January of 2005, he started his own online website to track stolen bikes in Chicago. He calls it the Chicago Stolen Bike Registry, and I put a link in the show notes to it. This is a place where you're going to be able to get detailed descriptions of stolen bikes, including serial numbers, police report numbers, specifics about how bikes were stolen, how they'd been locked, and he's hoping that people can use this information to confirm whether a bike they believe might be stolen actually was, or to identify used bikes that are listed on Craigslist or eBay or in the recycler. He says, quote, "I just wanted to give people something they could do if they lost their bike or saw one and thought that they might that it might be stolen." So congratulations to Howard for doing something like that. If you are in Chicago, you've had a bike stolen, or you're looking at a used bike that you want to buy, make sure that you click on the link in the show notes and that you check the stolen bike database before you go ahead and do anything. And maybe you can help reunite somebody with their stolen bike and maybe put some bad guys in jail at the same time. And finally tonight, here's another crime-fighting story to go along with Howard and his stolen bike database. On Saturday evening, two nuns believed that they saw a man who they recognized as being somebody who had stolen money from their church. They invited the man into the church, and while one nun kept him occupied, the other went to call the police. Well, this guy got a little bit suspicious, and he was probably feeling pretty nervous because he knew that he had stolen money from this church before, and he ran off. So here come these two nuns wearing full habits and full nun regalia. They hopped on their bikes, and they gave chase. They chased the guy through the streets of Amsterdam, and finally, he ended up hiding in a residential neighborhood. So kudos to the bike-riding, crime-fighting nuns of Amsterdam. And that's going to do it for the news, because there's just none left. Okay, before we get on with all of our features, I do have a special announcement to make tonight. I am proud and honored to announce that the Fredcast has indeed been nominated for a 2006 People's Choice Podcast Award. I have to thank all of you for your nominations to this year's podcast awards. We are nominated among four other shows in the health and fitness section of the podcast awards. Now, among the shows is another sports show called Fidipidations, which is a running show. And when I look at Podcast Alley, we are always near each other when it comes to the overall rankings. And in the sports rankings, Fidipidations is always number one, and the Fredcast is usually number two. So it's going to be a real uphill battle to try to win the People's Choice Award this year. But nevertheless, I literally am honored, and I want to thank all of you, not only for nominating the Fredcast, but also for staying subscribed and for listening and for making the Fredcast as popular as it has become. Now, voting opens to the public on Friday, July 28th, and it closes on August 11th. Everyone can vote once per day for the entire 15-day period. I have some very stiff competition, if you will, and you'll understand what I mean when you see the other nominees in the category. And I'm hoping that all of you will vote, and it would be great if we won. It would especially be great if us cyclists were able to beat those runners. But again, I'm very, very honored. Thank you very much for nominating the Fredcast, and I will be putting a link on the Fredcast website as soon as it's available, so that you will know where to go and vote for the Fredcast. And I hope that you will not only vote for the Fredcast, but vote for all of your favorite podcasts that have been nominated this year for People's Choice Award. So again, thank you very much. I'm very, very honored, as I've said several times now. Thanks. Okay, but let's get on with the rest of the show. Now, for the past couple of weeks, this is normally where I have played you a segment that's been provided by a listener named Rick that's called Bents on the Fredcast. And Rick has been generously giving of his time to educate all of us on recumbent bicycles. But now Rick and I believe that that has run its course on the Fredcast, and we're going to be rolling that out into its own podcast, which will be coming soon, and it's going to be called Cycling Reimagined. So look for that coming soon in iTunes. I'll be sure to put a link into the Fredcast page. I want to say a huge thank you to Rick for all of the time that he spent educating us on recumbent bikes, and wish him a lot of luck with his new Cycling Reimagined podcast. And I hope that all of you, when it does become available, will subscribe to it so we can continue to learn even more about recumbent bikes. So thanks again, Rick, for all of the work that you've done. We're looking forward to your new podcast and the best of luck with that new podcast. Okay, but coming up now, I have a great review for you from a listener named Dan, who's going to be telling us about his new Polar heart rate monitor / computer. Now, this review is about 9 minutes long, but it is filled with great information. So take it away, Dan, and your review of the Polar S725X.
Hi, this is Dan from Littleton, Mass., and I'm doing a review of the Polar S725X cyclo computer. I'm currently using a CatEye Astral 8 cyclo computer. I decided to buy the Polar brand computer based on the reputation in heart rate monitors and because they have an inexpensive power meter option for some of their cyclo computers. Polar's power meter option is an additional $300 on top of the core computer, whereas the other three or so companies that make power meters, from what I recall, have prices that start at $800 and climb into the thousands. So I'm still not sure I need a power meter or whether I'm going to get one, but if I didn't go down the Polar path, it wouldn't be a possibility at those other prices. So I decided that the possible power meter option was more important than, for example, GPS for what I wanted to do. I also wanted a device that could easily upload training data to my PC and download any configuration data I needed back to the unit. Both the Polar S720i and S725X fall into that category. The S725X is a slightly newer model, and according to Polar's website, has a couple additional features over the S720i, and those are displaying trip ascent information, not just altitude, on the wrist unit, as well as being able to download and display that altitude and ascent information in graphical form. The S725X also supports an optional running pod for cross-training or if you want to move into triathlons. Another advantage of the Polar product is that it mounts like a wristwatch. Although this seems like it might be a little awkward as a pure cycling computer, I'm particularly interested in the portability and ruggedness of a wristwatch, which is water resistant to 30 meters. I travel some for business, and I do like to take a break from cycling during the off season, and having this wristwatch style training tool really appeals to me. The S725X retails for about $350. However, you also probably have to buy an infrared to USB conversion tool in order to be able to download the data off your unit, as well as use the Polar PC software to configure the unit. Most desktop PCs don't come with an infrared sensor, and perhaps some laptops do, but this device is sold by Polar and costs another $40. Another option for the product is the Cadence sensor. It is not standard, and I decided not to get it, not because I don't want Cadence, because that I would actually have to get rid of the Cadence sensor if I were eventually to get the power meter option, because it's included in the power meter hardware. The Cadence sensor retails for another $30, and I figured it'd be better for me to just wait and see if I wanted the power meter. If I decide not to get the power meter, if it's too much, essentially, I will go and get the Cadence sensor so I can have all that data. Okay, enough about what I bought and why. How did I like what I got? First, the wrist unit looks just as expected. Impressive, highly capable, and not much bigger than a standard wristwatch. The wrist unit itself mounts to the bike via a plastic mount so that it can be firmly secured. The plastic mount uses tie wraps, and the wrist unit is secured to the plastic mount via a standard wrist strap, just like on a watch. It does take a little getting used to take on and off, as it's not as easy as a simple dock of a regular cyclo computer, but again, I like being able to do different sports with it occasionally and not worry about breaking it. The wireless speed sensor mounts to the front fork via tie wraps, pretty standard stuff, and the heart rate monitor chest strap is also straightforward to use. You just need to make sure it's tight enough but still comfortable so that it registers. In addition to the bike components, the Polar also comes with a CD with PC software on it. Once you get the bike computer initially configured, you can use Polar's PC software to configure the device. This is important to do, as although I believe you can configure everything directly through the wristwatch, it only has 5 buttons and it can get pretty cumbersome to set up all that information, such as user data like weight, age, and heart rate maximum, and bike settings like tire size and heart rate zones and exercise sets directly through the wristwatch. It's much easier to do that through a PC interface. Also on the CD with the PC software are 2 articles by Polar on training with heart rate monitors. One is called Precision Cycling and the other is called Performance Cycling. I basically seem to have missed the boat up until now as far as training with heart rate monitors, and I've had a lot of friends tell me that I should be using them, and I found these articles extremely valuable on getting me up to speed on how to set up my training zones, how to do that on my new bike computer, and why doing that is actually going to improve my cycling so that I can get the most out of it. Once you're all set with the unit, it can record over 11 hours of heart rate, speed, and altitude data at 5-second intervals before its memory fills up. This can include a large number of exercises. I find this somewhat as important, as sometimes I have the time to get the workout in, but I don't quite have the time to get the computer back to the PC for download. So it's nice that you can, you know, get to that every few days. As you add cadence option or a power option, the maximum time that it will store data for does go down. So you do either need to make sure you get back to the PC to download the data more frequently, or you can also slow down the recording rate to 15-second or 60-second intervals to increase the amount of exercise time storage. For me, 11 hours is more than enough. I decided to keep my CatEye Astral 8 on my bike with the Polar for 2 reasons. One is, I wanted to make sure I kept a rear-wheel speed sensor until I replaced it in case I used a trainer. The other was to check it against the Polar to see how it compared. The only thing I noticed is that the CatEye is quicker to update its display of speed than the Polar. When biking at a steady rate, they match each other as far as I can tell, and they both come up with the same average speed, or at least within a tenth of a mile per hour. But when accelerating or decelerating, the CatEye seems to provide a more up-to-date, instantaneous speed, and the CatEye usually records a higher max speed over my ride. Once you complete some exercises, you simply have to take the unit to your PC and sync it with the PC software. The software automatically pushes any config changes down and uploads any of the exercise files you generated. You pick which exercises to save, and they automatically get placed into the training calendar right where they belong. You can then see a graph of your heart rate, speed, and altitude over time. You can zoom in on certain sections, examine details of lap times, and annotate the exercise overall with the route description, or go into various aspects of your lap time markers and add descriptions there. You can also see if you've met your goals for your times in your particular heart rate zones, or frankly any other items you need. There are all kinds of summary graphs the tool can also generate, like training time, time in your heart rate zones, and distance and pace information, and it provides that on a weekly or greater basis. There are a few things the PC software can't do that I think it should. The first is the ability to display a summary of your lap times by description across all the exercises, so you can compare how you've done from one training ride to the next on your favorite hill climb or your favorite sprint or whatever. It seems like an obvious feature and something we'd all like to do, and clearly all the data is there, but it just doesn't have a way to show it. The other item I'd like to see is the ability to change which day of the week a week starts on. The training calendar is fixed with a Sunday start and a Saturday end, but for my training I'd prefer a Monday start with a Sunday end, and I'd like all the weekly training reports to follow that. So, in summary, I really like this product and I see myself using it for a long time. I'd like the PC software to be a little stronger, maybe a little easier to use, but it pretty much does just about everything you need. I'd just like it to be a little better. I'm going to give myself a little more time before I decide whether I'm going to get the power meter, but that's more based on my own goals and my personal budget. I'm confident the Polar product will be a good one.
Wow, great review, Dan. Thank you so much for sending that in. It is always interesting to hear from listeners and find out their personal experiences with products, especially technical and technological products. And that one really covered all the bases. And I hope that all of you other Fredcast listeners found that to be useful. And if you've got a product that you think the other Fredcast listeners might be interested in hearing you review, feel free to drop me an email. And if it's something I think that everyone would be interested in, I love to get your review as well. So again, thanks to Dan for that excellent review of his Polar Heart Rate Monitor S725X. Okay, I want to turn back to professional cycling just for a moment or two and talk about something that I've gotten a lot of email about. And this is probably the one subject I've gotten more email on in the entire time that I've been doing the Fredcast. And that is this whole doping scandal and some of the comments that I've made here on the Fredcast about doping. And I've gotten emails both in favor of some of the things that I've said, and I've gotten emails that have said that these guys have gotten a bum rap. And also, I've gotten a couple of emails from people who have really taken me to task on some of the comments that I've made about doping. And it's those comments that I want to refer to right now. I've gotten emails from people who have said that it's their opinion that it's entirely possible that the entire peloton might be doping, and that the way that you win races is simply by having a better doctor or by having a treatment program that is indetectable by the tests that are currently being used by the UCI and WADA. And that since this is how these people choose to make a living, and this is how they support themselves and their families, that it's not right for me or for anyone else to criticize them because it's the only way that they're able to stay competitive. And I just want to respond to that because I think I've been very vocal in my opposition to doping and in my frustration with these continuing doping scandals coming up right and left. So I just want to be really clear about how I feel about this doping situation. And it goes like this. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but for me, I still believe in things like honesty, integrity, and ethics. Maybe those are old-fashioned values, and maybe in the 21st century, it's not right to apply honesty and ethics to things. But you know what? It's my opinion that lying is lying, cheating is cheating, and that if there are rules or laws, you've got to follow them. And especially when we're talking about something like sports, where these individuals, whether they're cyclists, soccer players, baseball players, basketball players, they have little kids that look up to them. And it's hard enough as a parent these days to raise a good kid with a lot of these influences coming at them right and left from television and radio and the internet. It's hard enough to raise them as good kids, as honest kids, as moral kids, when they're also looking up at their idols in sports and seeing some of the things that they're doing and some of the things that they're getting away with. So no, I won't countenance this. I won't countenance doping. I won't countenance cheating, and that's what it is. I won't countenance lying, also what it is. And I would hope that you wouldn't countenance it either, that you would be willing to stand up and say, no, enough is enough. If you are doping, you have no place in professional sports. And if that means that the entire peloton, if indeed all of them are doping, if that means that the entire peloton gets kicked out, then so be it. Because then we will have real sportsmen, real people who have ethics and values in the sport, following the rules and using their God-given talents instead of talents that come to them by way of an IV or by way of a hypodermic or by way of getting somebody else's blood or using chemicals to get an advantage over the competition. It isn't right, it's lying, it's cheating, and I will never give in on this. And so if you like my show and maybe you disagree with me on this, I hope you'll continue listening. But I'm not going to change my opinion on this simply for ratings or simply for the fact that a couple of people don't like my opinion on it. That's the way it is. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm overly honest on things like this, but that's my position. Take it or leave it. Okay, but enough about that. Let's talk a second about something I promised to talk to you about, and that is the business trip I took last week, where I was, and how I was able to do some cycling. Believe it or not, and a lot of people have a hard time believing this, I was actually on business last week in the state of Hawaii. I visited three islands. I visited Oahu, Maui, and the Big Island of Hawaii. Now, in my business, most business occurs between about 6 o'clock in the morning and about 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon. And after about 3:30 in the afternoon, there's not a whole lot of people that I can go see. Knowing that, I had planned that I'd get up early, see all the people that I needed to see in the morning and in the afternoon, and about 3:30 or 4 o'clock, I'd be able to go back to my hotel, put on my cycling clothes, and go out and go for a ride. But I didn't want to bring my bike with me because I was going to be traveling and moving around from hotel to hotel and from island to island, and I didn't want to bring my bike. And as of right now, I don't have a decent folding bike for road cycling. So I went on a search to try to find a couple of shops in the islands that would be able to rent me good bicycles where I could get a really good training ride in while I was out there on a business trip. I was actually able to find a shop on each of the islands that was able to rent me really, really good bikes. On Oahu, I rented from a shop called The Bike Shop, and they're right in downtown Honolulu, not far from Waikiki and a lot of the major hotels. And they rented me a Specialized Roubaix, and that was a pretty good bike. I just made sure that I brought my own pedals and shoes and helmet and all my clothes, and they had everything else. Bike included a tool bag on the back, and had some really great rides on Oahu. One of the things that made my rides on Oahu so great is a map that's put out by the Hawaii Department of Transportation, and it's called Bike Oahu, and this map was incredible. I have never seen a cycling map like this. It included all of the roads were color-coded, telling you whether it was for beginner cyclists or advanced cyclists or moderate cyclists. It showed you where there were climbs and what kind, you know, how bad the climbs were, if you will. It showed in places how wide the shoulder was so that you knew whether or not there was room for you to ride on, in some places, what are pretty narrow roads. It showed the location of bike shops. It showed the location of parks, restrooms, water, the locations of convenience stores. It was invaluable. In, you know, if you went on a 40, 45 mile ride because it was so hot, obviously I needed to refill my water bottle. So it was great to be able to just glance down at the map and know where I would be able to find some place where I could buy some water or some Gatorade or whatever it was that I needed when I was out there on the road. So this map was incredible. If you do go cycling in Hawaii, definitely recommend that you pick this up from the shop, whether you're renting from them or you bring your own bikes. And, the map is free, so it was really, really great. Now, on Maui, I rented from an amazing store called Maui Cyclery. It is a bit of a drive. It's probably going to take you about 15 or 20 minutes to get there from the Kahului Airport in Maui. But once you get there, you're not going to believe this store. Very high-end. They have some great rental bikes that include Scott and Lightspeed. They rented me a Lightspeed, and I think I've talked about it here before. I've never really been a fan of titanium bikes, but as you know, I ride a carbon fiber bike. Having ridden the aluminum bike for a few days in Oahu, I was very pleased to be on a titanium bike in Maui, and it was a really nicely set up bike with Altegra components, and it even came with a cycle computer. Now, of course, you know me. I brought my Garmin Edge with me so that I would be able to hook that up on the bike, but it was nice to have the cycle computer on the bike nevertheless. Now I know if I go back there, I don't necessarily have to bring my Edge in order to get some data while I'm out there riding. Now in Maui, there is also a pretty good map for cycling in Maui. This one is not free. It's commercially produced, and I have to say that the information on it is pretty good, but still nowhere near as good as the information as on the Bike Oahu map that I mentioned a few minutes ago. Now, I did not rent a bike this time on the Big Island, but I have rented before when I was there on vacation from a company called Bike Works, and they're located right in downtown Kona in the industrial section of town. And they have a very good selection of rental bikes. And when I was there, they rented me a Trek, fairly high-end bike. And I did some really great rides when I was there. Now, I did not look for a cycling map when I was on the Big Island last time. I pretty much stayed on the main road between Hawi, which is up on the northern coast of the Big Island, and down through past Kona to the south. So can't tell you about any cycling maps there. If any of the listeners know about cycling maps for the Big Island of Hawaii, I'd appreciate it. As well as if you've got any resources for perhaps a good bike shop that rents bikes on the island of Lanai. And I'm mentioning all of this because I've talked about cycling in Hawaii before and I've gotten a lot of questions about it. So having been there and had the opportunity to ride, I thought you'd be interested in hearing about this. Now, I did say take some photos when I did a really nice ride around the island in Oahu one day, and I'll be putting those up on the Fredcast Gallery in the next day or two so that you can see some of the great pictures that I took when I was out there riding. It is an amazing place to ride for a number of obvious reasons. Number one, the scenery, of course, is gorgeous and varied because if you take the Big Island, for instance, a lot of the scenery that you're going to see, at least on the Kohala coast and on the Kona side of the island, you're going to see a lot of lava from the volcanoes, as well as, of course, being able to see the ocean. When you're in Maui or on Oahu, you can see everything from rainforests to lava fields, to pineapple fields, and of course, some beautiful beaches and vistas. The topography in the islands, because they all were created by volcanoes, the topography is really varied, and you can get some excellent climbs and some beautiful descents. I had some rides where I was literally just roller coastering up and down through gorges, where on one side there was really verdant tropical rainforest, and on the other side I was looking at the Pacific Ocean. Just gorgeous rides that I was able to take. Now, a lot of the roads in Hawaii are one lane in both directions. And at first, you might think that's pretty scary for a cyclist. I know if it was here in Southern California, as I talked about earlier in the show, that would scare the heck out of me. But it's different in Hawaii. In a lot of cases, you're going to have very ample shoulder areas that are clean. They're not filled with debris as they are here on the mainland in a lot of cases, or you're going to find excellent bicycle lanes that you'll be able to use. And the other thing that I found, and this blew me away, was how cycling aware a lot of the drivers are in the state of Hawaii. And it didn't vary from island to island. If they were locals, I found that they were incredibly cycling aware. What do I mean by that? If I was on a narrow road and a car came up behind me, they stayed behind me until I gave them a sign for them and motioned for them to go by. And then, of course, you know, I gave them the hang loose or the shaka sign to say thanks. I was amazed and totally pleased with how cycling aware the drivers were in the state of Hawaii. So there's just a little bit of information about where I was last week. Now you understand why my internet connections were so poor. It was very difficult for me to find a decent high-speed connection in order to upload shows. So I apologize for having two short shows last week. But hopefully some of this information that I've given you about cycling in Hawaii will be useful for you for one of your next vacations in what is perhaps one of the most beautiful of the 50 United States. And if you have more information about cycling in Hawaii or in any other vacation spots where you think that people might want to rent bikes and where they're going to want to be able to find good cycling routes, please drop me an email, thefredcast@gmail.com. I'll be happy to share that information with the rest of the listeners. A couple of new and notable items on the internet that I wanted to talk to you about tonight, and they all have to do with mapping. The first one I want to tell you about is an individual who is a cyclist who went out and purchased a Garmin Edge and was really disappointed with how difficult he found it to be to create routes and then download those into his Garmin Edge. And he created what we've talked about before, which is a mashup of Google Maps and some scripts that he created where you can go onto the internet, onto a link that I've put in the show notes, and you can click around in Google Maps and create a route which you can then upload into your Garmin Edge, and then you'll be able to follow that route when you're out on the road. And there's a really great explanation of why this individual did it and how it works, and I've tried it. It works very, very well. It's very simple to do. And so if you've got a Garmin Edge and you're interested in creating routes on your Edge very quickly and uploading those to your Garmin, go onto this website. It's at marengo-ltd.com. And if you click on the link in the show notes, you are going to find that information there, and I think you'll find it very useful. Now, another mashup that we've talked about before, but one that I've been playing with quite a bit lately, is routeslip.com. And as you'll remember, routeslip.com was the site where you could go on, you could create a route, and it would enable you to print out a route sheet that you could take with you so that you could follow along, just as you do when you do an organized ride, and it would tell you, go a mile, 0.2, and turn right, go 1.1 and turn left, and it would give you the street names. And it will also create elevation profiles, something we've talked about a lot here on the Fredcast. Well, Ryan, who created routeslip.com, has made a lot of changes to the site and made it even more useful than it was before. And as a matter of fact, I have put a link in the show notes not only to routeslip.com, but I've also put a link in to a couple of the routes that I did when I was over in Hawaii that I thought that you might find useful. Or at least interesting. So check out routeslip.com. Ryan is constantly making changes to it. I'm finding it more and more useful every time that I use it. And one of the ways that I use it, by the way, is if I'm traveling. As you know, as you've gotten to know, I travel a lot for business, and I do try to keep my training up when I'm traveling. Routeslip.com is fantastic because if you're going to, for instance, California, and you know that you're going to be in the Los Angeles area and you want to get in a couple of rides, you can search in Los Angeles, California for routes that other users have posted under routeslip.com, and then you'll be able to print out a route sheet and be able to follow a route without having to figure out where you should turn and where you should go. It's all been done for you. So I'm finding it more and more useful, and I think that you will too. Go ahead and check it out. Links are in the show notes. And finally, while we're on the subject of maps, listener Howard sent in a link, and I put a link in the show notes, to a blog posting where someone has figured out how they can download color maps into their fifth generation or their color iPod. And I've tried this all out also. It works very, very well. There's a script on the webpage that you need to download and run on your computer in order to do this. But once you do, if you need to have a map on your iPod, whether it's for cycling or driving or for geocaching or for whatever reason you need to have a map, it's a really handy way to carry maps around, and it's a very simple process to follow. So go ahead, click on the link in the show notes, and it will give you the capability of putting maps right there on your iPod in living color. And I know we're running a little bit long this evening, so I will be brief with our upcoming rides and events, but I don't want to leave these out of the show because I know a lot of you really appreciate these. The first one is the International Fixed Gear Symposium. This is taking place August 10th through the 12th, 2006, and it came to us courtesy of the Michigan Cycling Podcast. And the International Fixed Gear Symposium comes to Traverse City, Michigan for 3 days, where they're going to be talking about what else but fixies, fixed gear bikes. And fixies seem to be really returning in popularity in recent years. As a matter of fact, there was a great article on fixed gear bikes in a recent edition of the Wall Street Journal. So if it's in the Wall Street Journal, it really must be something that people are talking about. So if you're into fixed gear bikes and you're anywhere near Traverse City, Michigan, August 10th through 12th, check out the International Fixed Gear Symposium, and I put a link in the show notes to that. Next, August 12th through the 13th, thanks to listener Bob for telling us about the Moonlight Ramble, which takes place in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, the Moonlight Ramble is a night ride, and it starts at midnight, and it goes through the streets of St. Louis. And this is a pretty large event. They're looking at about 10,000 to 15,000 cyclists. It gets a little bit crowded, but once you start going down the course, things start to get thinned out, and it becomes a really great ride, according to Bob. The route is closed to motor vehicles, and when do you get a chance to ride through a downtown metropolitan area in the middle of the night with 10 or 15,000 of your closest cycling friends? It just sounds like a great fun event. It's not a real long event. You can either do a 10 or a 20 mile ride, but still, it sounds like a lot of fun. And for those of you in the St. Louis, Missouri area, great thing to look forward to. Next is the OD Ram. This is the one-day ride across Michigan. Again, coming to us from the Michigan Cycling Podcast. This takes place September 9th, and it's a one-day ride across Michigan's Lower Peninsula. You can check that out. I put a link in the show notes to that. Next is the Tour of Sebring, which takes place in Florida from September 2nd through the 4th. And I want to thank listener Ray for this one. It's a three-day bicycle event, and it on September the 2nd, which is a Saturday, you can do a 62, 31, 20, or 12-mile route. On Sunday, September 3rd, you can do a century, a metric century, 31, 20, or 12 miles. And on Monday, September 4th, there's a metric, 31 miles, 20 miles, and 12 miles. And I've put a link in the show notes to this one as well. Finally, following up on my report about riding in Hawaii, don't forget about the Honolulu Century, September the 24th. This is Hawaii's oldest and largest cycling event, first established in 1981, and you have your choice of riding 20, 25, 40, 50, 75, or 100 miles. And then November 19th is the Maui Century, and this one you have your choice of 25, 50, 75, or 100 miles. Links are in the show notes to all of these rides, and I think that I've given you a real good cross-section of the United States, and I know that I'm focusing a lot on rides in the United States, so those of you who are international listeners, and I know there's a lot of you out there, please, if there's rides coming up that you know about in the next few weeks or in the next few months in your neck of the woods, please send me an email, thefredcast@gmail.com, and let me know so that I can be focusing on those rides as well in an upcoming Fredcast. Just one shout out this evening, and this one goes to listener Dennis, who wrote to tell me about his friend Patrick Carrant, who was a 28-year-old Cat 1 cyclist in the San Francisco Bay Area, who was involved in a bicycle versus auto crash on July 1st. And he unfortunately passed away on July the 8th. Now, apparently, Pat was a very popular cyclist in Northern California. He even won awards as an up-and-coming cyclist. And apparently, from a lot of the things that I've read on the internet about him, he was just an inspirational individual and a good friend, somebody that you could always count on. And it's always sad to hear somebody passing. On Saturday, July the 22nd, 250 cyclists showed up to remember Patrick by riding from the sea to 3,000 feet up Mount Diablo, and they did this in 100-degree weather. So as a tribute to Pat, as a tribute to listener Dennis, and to all of Pat's friends, I wanted to send this shout-out to let them know that we're thinking of you guys in your grief, and we're thinking about Pat, and all of us should be out there thinking about safety whenever we ride, riding as defensively as we can, because you never know when something like this can happen. And it is always tragic when it does. And so we just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to Dennis and all of Pat's friends. And I've put a link in the show notes to a blog, as well as links to newspaper articles and a website signed by over 500 people whose lives were touched by Pat. So, thoughts and prayers to you, Dennis, and to your friends and to your family, as well as to Patrick's friends and family. We wish you all the best. Now, before I close out the show tonight, just a personal note that I wanted to mention. I have now less than 24 hours left to remain in my 30s. I'm reaching that big 4-0 birthday on Thursday the 27th. And I only mention it because we've talked a lot on the Fredcast about cycling as therapy. And I was invited this weekend to go to the 40th birthday party of a high school buddy of mine, a guy I played football with, somebody who I knew for many years growing up. And he called to invite me to his 40th birthday party because it's his birthday this week as well. And I was thinking that as I go there, I'm probably going to see a lot of other people from high school, people who I haven't seen in quite some time, as you can imagine. And thinking back on, even though I played sports in high school, thanks to cycling, I'm in the best shape of my life. And while I'm facing this supposedly momentous birthday, to me, it's just another day this week. Turning 40 means nothing to me because I'm in such great shape, because I feel so good, and I owe all of that to cycling. So if you were thinking today about skipping your training ride, if you were thinking that maybe you were going to take it easier on yourself this week, as somebody who's turning the big 4-0 in less than 24 hours, I have to tell you, get on your bike and ride. Because when you hit one of these momentous birthdays or one of these momentous occasions, you get invited to a high school reunion, you're going to go see people that you haven't seen in 20 years, you're going to feel better about yourself, you're going to live longer, and cycling is going to be the thing that gets you there. So with that, I'm going to close the show. I'm going to say thank you all for listening. Thank you all for staying subscribed. Thank you all for riding. Please continue to vote for the Fredcast at Podcast Alley. I always appreciate that. It sure would be nice 1 month to be number one in the sports category against Fidipidations. Let's see if we can do that. Don't forget to check the Fredcast.com webpage in the next few days, as the voting is going to start on the People's Choice Podcast Awards, and I'd like to see how far we can go and see if we can't win one. That would be great. Please continue to spread the word among your friends. Don't forget, you can contact me at any time via email. I get dozens, hundreds of emails every week. I love getting them, and I do respond to every single one. You can send me an email or an audio comment to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also send an audio comment via the Fredcast listener hotline, and that's 206-203-FRED. And you can also send an audio comment by using the audio link on the front page of the Fredcast.com website. So lots of ways that you can stay in contact with the Fredcast between shows. Finally tonight, as we do every week, and I know a lot of you like this, it's our PodSafe cycling music. Tonight's music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The song this week is called Last Night. The artist name is Stingray, and links are in the show notes. So as I close out my last night of being 39, I hope you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Hey, you call me on the phone.